Hey everyone, welcome back to the On the Brink podcast. I am here with a very special guest today. His name is John, and he is a friend from college. I've known him now for, gosh, it's got to be like 7 years, something crazy like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like 7, 8 years.
Yeah, and I was, you know, in prepping for this episode, I was really thinking about, you know, the first time that we met. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, we were in the same Gateway class.
Right.
With at Wesleyan.
Dr. F.
Yes. And so we, like, he's one of my first friends, like, honestly, one of the first people that I met at Wesleyan. So I have known him for quite a long time, and I'm really excited to have him on the podcast today for several reasons. First of all, because he's a friend of mine, and also because he brings a different perspective. He has a very interesting career path, and he is also married. So he brings a lot of interesting things to the table here. So I'm just really excited to have him. So welcome to the podcast, John.
Yeah, thanks. I'm super excited to do it too. It was awesome when you reached out and we hadn't caught up in a while. So it was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So do you want to tell my listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yeah. So you mentioned that I'm married. I've been married now for almost exactly a year. We just had our first anniversary on September 7th. You mentioned my career path too. So I got my degree in music with a concentration in voice. And then I became an admissions counselor at our alma mater. And then I kind of fell in love with horticulture. Well, I kind of fell in love with horticulture while we were in college and wished that Wesleyan had a little bit more of an involved option for a path of study for that. But unfortunately they didn't. However, while I was an admissions counselor, there are quite a few garden shops in Bloomington Normal, which is like not normal for a town this size or a twin cities this size. And I developed really nice relationships with the employees at one of them. And the owner actually called me while I was working at Wesleyan and offered me a job part-time. And then I called him back and I was just kind of like, hey, what about full-time? And we met at a Panera and talked for a while and ended up being awesome. And that's what I do now. So,
oh my gosh, that's crazy. I didn't even know that part. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it was crazy because I mentioned to my boss at Wesleyan that he called me and asked for like 10 hours a week. Specifically, so the garden shop's broken down into like four different sections. There's like outdoor gardening, indoor house plants, floral and giftware. And now I actually manage one of the four departments. I manage the indoor house plant tropical section. Conveniently, my predecessor retired the year after I got there and I got promoted to his position. So it was like just the stars aligned, you know. I ended up making the same amount of money that I was making at Wesleyan and doing something I was 10 times more passionate about. So,
yeah, that's awesome. So we're definitely going to get into that whole path and like what ultimately, you know, brought you to the garden shop and like what made you switch and like your path out of music a little bit. We're definitely going to talk about that.
For sure.
But first I want to talk a little bit about what it's like to be married as a 25-year-old, because I'm your age. I am, you know, very far from that situation. So I'm curious like what that's been like. And I was at his wedding. So, that was a blast and it was like crazy to think that it was a whole year ago. So congratulations, right. First of all, on making
yeah,
it to
thanks.
A year. And, so I'm curious what it's like.
That's like a freaking whole universe to dive into. It's like very complex situation. I've been trying to think about since you reached out to me just about how to even begin to talk about it, just with that intro. And I think one of the main things that I can see different, and it's really hard because Tess and I have been together for like 5 years now. It's really hard to even like think about how it would be different because technically I didn't even have like an independent adult life outside of college without her. So I was a very independent person, like, and I still am, especially of my three brothers and I. I'm definitely like the only one of us that's gone far away from home for college and kind of just makes stuff like that happen. And it definitely was something that was always a part of who I was. And then I kind of met Tess, and another part of who I am is the fact that I like, I can, when I start, I mentioned it even in my vows at our wedding that my mom called me out on it. When I've had like past girlfriends and obviously Tess, it's like when I am starting to date someone and I get involved with someone, like I fall head over heels and I fall hard and fast for whoever that person is. And like, just totally dive into the relationship a lot faster than some people might like. And that was definitely, kind of an issue for me and Tess, like when we first started dating, because I am not someone who shies away from hard topics to talk about. Like, I always find it hysterical when I hear other couples who have been married for longer than us say that they've not talked about like how many kids they want or like where they want to end up moving, like for their adult life or what career path they want or anything like that. I'm like, me and Tess talked about that in like the first month we were dating.
You're also like a very blunt, straightforward kind of guy. You've always, right, like, since day one that I knew you, like, I knew who you were, right, you know, like, I knew a lot about you from the start. So, like, it does not surprise me that you're that way.
Right. And that, I mean, that's gotten me into trouble. And it's also gotten me out of a lot of trouble. Like, there are a lot, there are a lot of extremes there. If it weren't for the fact that I was blunt, I don't think I would have had a lot of the job opportunities that I have had and just kind of gone for it and made it happen, like I said earlier. But I've definitely also gotten into a little bit of trouble because of it. And that was one thing that's a huge difference between Tess and I, is that I'm very extroverted and very blunt, and I can meet someone and like the same night I met them have a conversation about like the universe and if we believe in God and like have a 3-hour long conversation until 4 a.m. So, and she is definitely more introverted and can definitely do that too. But it's not her go-to kind of way of being. She likes to kind of feel people out a little bit more, and understand who they are and gauge whether or not they'll kind of vibe before she goes that deep into like conversation or anything like that. It definitely, kind of getting back to your initial question about what married life is like, I think for us, one of the biggest things that I've noticed just like about where we live and what we do for work and things like that is that we're both very, life oriented. We love what we do and we have jobs that we're passionate about, but we're definitely both kind of people that we're type A type people in our own ways. And we love to plan for the future. And when I just look around our house, it's like we're 25 and 26 and we rent a 2-bedroom, 1.5-bath house. And like, we have a china cabinet full of her mom's china. And like, we have matching furniture and like a nice TV and like nice stuff. And like, a lot of the people our age are still kind of like just putting money back or like kind of saving up for the future or going out and traveling and having crazy experiences or even just trying to figure out what they're doing for work and stuff like that. And I think Tess and I, like, we have chosen to make it a priority that we're like, we're married. We want to plan for the future. We want X amount of kids by X amount of age and we want to move back to Chicago by this time. And we know we're going to need this, that, and the other. So we're going to work on buying those things now and saving up for those things now. And it didn't seem kind of out of the ordinary to us until we've made a lot of friends here in Bloomington and a lot of other couple friends, and they come into our house and they're kind of like, what is going on here? Like, is this like your mom's house, or like whose china is that in the freaking china cabinet? And Tessa's like, oh, look, we have more. And she'll bring out all her pretty dishes and stuff. And it's just kind of like what we prioritize, you know, and definitely makes an impact on how we live our lives as a couple, because then when it comes to what our jobs are, we're definitely not the type of people that are always on the grind, you know. She has a couple friends that are just nonstop, like we can't even ever see them, you know what I mean? Because they're just always working. They have their full-time job and then this part-time job, and then they do kind of freelance work and this, that, and the other thing. And we definitely can get like that at some times in our lives, but I think our overall kind of goal is spending as much time together and like making our home a happy place to be, and building our relationship well, because I mean, if you want to think about kids, you better have a strong relationship before you do that.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I mean, it sounds like you guys are like very adult in all of those things, which is so cool. And also it's like very different from my lifestyle, just because, I mean, I did the whole grad school thing, move across the country, and then get jobs, and they're, you know, it's very, very different because I have, you right, know, yeah, dated people along the way, but haven't really like settled down. And I don't think that like Western Mass is going to be like my forever home or anything like that either. So it's very interesting then to hear your perspective, and you're like, you know, concretely planning for the future, which is awesome.
Yeah. It's definitely weird because like, when we do talk about stuff like this, a lot of people will say things like that. I mean, I even told my boss at Wesleyan that when we were looking for a place before Tess and I got married, I had a couple roommates. I actually roomed with Loretto from Wesleyan for a year. And then Sean's brother, younger brother, went to ISU. And it was really cool that I had that time. But I even said when I was looking for a new place to rent to my boss, like, I don't want like a bachelor pad. Like, I had a house in college and like, I'd like been there, done that. I want like a big boy house. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's funny to hear you say like very adult. And I think that that's like one small way to be adult. You know what I mean? Like, I'm super jealous that you are able to do what you do and go and get a master's degree and kind of pursue that passion in that way. And I wish that I kind of had the opportunity to do that a little bit more. But I think that because of the choices that Tess and I have made, it's become just a little bit less likely. Like, don't get me wrong, she's definitely said like, if you want to go to get a master's in horticulture, like I'm right here to support you. But I think what that does is it kind of sets us back maybe 2 years, and then, well, what am I going to do for work? Can I get an assistantship to help pay for that? Like, how are we going to be able to stay where we're living right now? And all those questions kind of come into play. And one of the biggest things I think that has fueled me thinking like this is, I'm sure I've told you before, but my dad passed away when I was 11 years old. And it kind of, from a young age, I was at the point where I was cognizant enough to like be aware of how stuff was working and how things were changing. But still to just be like, I'm an 11-year-old kid and like at the mercy of all the adults around me. So my mom was by herself with four boys, and it totally, totally influenced like my way of thinking about life. It's like, we have one life, and I'm, let's say when I was a senior at Wesleyan, like I'm 21 and I'm dating the girl that I know I want to marry, And let's make that happen as soon as possible, and then get a place as soon as possible and start a family as soon as possible, because you never know when something's going to happen or when something is going to throw off your plans. And so start preparing now.
Yeah. Well, you can't take things for granted. And that's such an important lesson that sometimes you can't learn unless you've had something like that happen to you in your life. Sure. So yeah, it's so interesting too, like the way that changes your way of thinking and then like your whole life basically. But
yeah,
but you're obviously doing great where you're at right now. And I definitely want to chat with you a little bit about like segueing here into what you're currently doing. And then like taking it back, I guess, in time from like when you graduated Wesleyan with a music degree, right. And then what changed between that and then working for Wesleyan and then ultimately trying to get into horticulture, which is something like, you look at music, you look at horticulture, like I don't really see a connection here, right. But it's so cool. It's so cool. So I want to hear about how you got into all of that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, just as well as I do that the liberal arts university will always try to draw a correlation between the most separate fields that you could think of. So yeah. I've had a lot of people tell me all the things I can do that would connect music and plants.
Oh, okay, cool.
But I definitely don't want to do those.
Oh, okay.
but don't get me wrong. Like music was and is a huge part of my life, will always be a huge part of my life. And one of the biggest things that kind of changed things for me was, I kind of had a rocky path in music education, and I was a music education major for the first 3 years I was at Wesleyan. And then things kind of went wrong. I was not doing so hot in one of my critical classes. And I literally got to the point where I had to like appeal to continue to be a music education major. And at that point I remember sitting in my college house at Sage, on the second floor, and at like 3 a.m. on Tessa's laptop, just kind of going through and writing this like appeal to stay in the major. And you kind of have to write a little essay about why you deserve to be in the major and, why it's your passion and what you want to do in life and blah, blah, blah. And I was sitting there writing it. And I'm just kind of like, I really don't want to do this. Like I remember bullshitting a lot of it, like, and just thinking to myself, like, I love performing and I love singing and I'm a damn good teacher. Like it was one of my things at Wesleyan that a lot of people knew that I wasn't like a straight A student. And that when it came to like the paperwork and putting in that, I mean, having that work ethic, I mean, you were one of my friends that had like the best work ethic that I ever noticed at Wesleyan. And I always tried to like kick myself into gear about stuff like that. But I'm the type of person that unless I'm passionate about it, like it just falls to the wayside and I kind of put it on the back burner. But when I got into my clinicals and I ended up teaching in front of a class, like a lot of my peers came up to me and said like, hey, I know I've given you a lot of crap about like not being the best poster child for music education and like not keeping up with homework or this, that, and the other, but like you just taught the hell out of that class. Like it comes really naturally to me, but I'm thinking about, okay, do I want to work from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. for 9 months out of the year? I mean, sometimes more than that, and like lesson planning, and maybe I'll teach this class for 3 years so that I work my way up to teaching high school, which is what I really wanted to teach, and dealing with kids' issues, and just thinking of myself as a high schooler and how much of a smartass I was and how many problems I gave my professors or my teachers. And I'm just like, I don't want to do that. And I mean, I teach private lessons, I think very well, way better than I would enjoy teaching a class. But I kind of reevaluated when I had to make that appeal and was just like, you know what, if if this appeal doesn't go through, then that's not the worst thing in the world. I have a lot of people ask me about why I have that degree and then I'm doing what I'm doing. And it's kind of like, I basically tell people, well, I'm like a first generation college student and I didn't have any guidance and my parents or my mom didn't really know what to do. And was just kind of like, I mean, she was obviously my biggest supporter and she actually is the reason I went to Wesleyan. I was set on ISU after I auditioned to one school.
Oh no. Okay. Well,
yeah.
You came around to see the light.
Yeah. Right. I auditioned at ISU and I was kind of like, yep, that's great. I'll do that. Whatever. And to me, I didn't have the education of knowing what institution was what. I didn't even know that ISU was like, yeah, you can go to a million different places that are like ISU. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then my mom actually like forced me to wake up on the day of my audition for Wesleyan because I was just going to blow it off.
Oh, no.
And she like woke me up and I got myself ready and got myself prepared. And my brother drove me down to Bloomington about 2 hours from the city. And I auditioned for, who was it? I think it was Bob Mangiolardi and Bill Hudson, I want to say, were the two people that were there. And I was kind of annoyed because I mean, Scott Ferguson wasn't there and none of the other voice faculty were there. It was only two people. And I was kind of like, okay, like I'm singing for these two professors that, I mean, at the time Hudson was just, I mean, a pretty new professor.
Yeah, he was like brand new. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, I liked Bob because he was a baritone. Like I was like, oh, baritone.
That was
great.
My teacher, yeah.
Right. And but then I actually got to sit in at co-choir and I will like never forget that. just going in and hearing that E flat major chord out of nowhere, it just blows your mind. And I mean, makes me like nostalgic just talking about it now.
I know. It's so sad. Like, that was like some of the best memories of college ever.
Right. Absolutely. And I remember being a part of that and then Ferg coming out afterwards and talking to me and being super like, oh yeah, I heard about your audition and I really want to talk to you and what's your ACT score and let's get you in and like just talking about stuff. And I didn't have the best GPA, but I had a pretty good ACT score and he was talking to me about paying for stuff. And I didn't think I could even like come close to affording Wesleyan, but didn't know at the time that it'd be probably the same amount of money to go to ISU versus Wesleyan. So I was like, why would I not take the opportunity to go to this fantastic school? Mm-hmm. And to be honest, it was just kind of like things fell in front of me. Like that's what I was good at. And when people told me, I mean, I went to high school at Jones College Prep, which is like the third best college prep high school in the city of Chicago and like in the top 100 high schools in the country. And so I had kids around me. I always tell people who ask me, like, I felt like the, what's the term for that? Like the queen of kings, like the opposite. Like I felt like the worst of the best, you know, like I was going to this phenomenal high school and like, I'm a smart person and like, I can get by these things, but I just didn't have the work ethic that a lot of these other kids had. Like, I always got by on like, I didn't have to study and I would do okay and, or even do really well. And then I got to high school and there were these kids that were super smart and were also studying 3 hours a night and like gonna be like the next freaking president of the United States and looking at Harvard and Yale. And I'm like, absolutely not. I can't do that. So I always kind of just did what I had to do and what people told me to do, like for the next day and the next week, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was also really hard because my mom really couldn't be a support system for me because she had a 3 and a 2 year old at home and then an 18 year old in college and she was by herself, not working.
Oh my God.
And so it was like, yeah, figure it out. And I remember like, I talk with Tess now and thinking back to like how my mom had to deal with stuff during that time of her life. Like I don't even know. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even know how what she did was possible. Like, she's like superhuman, you know? And it, every single time I needed something, like, it always made me feel so terrible, but we had like no money and we had no resources. And I remember every single semester I would have to wait and I would be locked out of registering because I was behind on my payments. And I would have my mom, like, she was waiting for this check or that check, or had to pull this money out of here and forward the money to Wesleyan. And then I would be able to register for classes, and it like scared the shit out of me every time. And I was thoroughly embarrassed every single time for 8 semesters that happened. But it was like, that was almost like a fuel, like, okay, you have to do this. Like, you have to get through, you have to make this happen. And I think that's kind of why I continued with music, because it was like my mom, I mean, gave me everything. And I felt like, well, what about Dan? What about Jake? What about Tim? Like, these are things that you're going above and beyond for me. Like, I need to make it worth your while. And with music, it was just like, I got a scholarship. I was really good at it. Like, even if the scholarship was only a couple $1,000s, it was like, well, if I didn't have that, I wouldn't have been going here. Mm-hmm. So, I think I did it because of that.
Yeah.
And then
Yeah. That makes sense. So then when did you decide, like, during your time in college, like, how did you become interested in horticulture? Like, where did that stem from?
Right. So one of my best friends, you know, Miranda, we were actually like my first memory of like getting into plants. I've always been the type of person that like, I will discover like a thing that humans know about, like just this random niche topic about something. And I'll be like, whoa, that is crazy. And I've never heard of that. And I will just dive headfirst into that topic that I found out about. I mean, in high school, I spent every penny I had on like buying like 3 different aquariums, and I kept like African cichlids, and I got into this huge aquarium thing where I had it in the basement. My mom was just upstairs like, you're not smoking pot? Okay, great. And just like, let me do that. Right, exactly. And just got into like keeping fish. And then I kind of fell out of that because I went to college. And then my freshman year at Wesleyan, I was in May term with Miranda, and it was, what was it, Italian literature. Super fun May term class. And we were just like bored one day, and we walked over to Casey's, where I manage now. And I got like some succulents, and I put them in a little pot and had them in my dorm for a while. And then that was kind of like the spark that set the fire, you know. Like, after that, I had plants that summer at home. And then my sophomore year, I had like probably a dozen plants in my dorm in McGill. And then that's when I met Tess, end of my sophomore year. And then we got an off-campus house, us 4 guys. And I filled that with plants. And then
we remember,
it was just like so many plants all the time. And I was constantly learning about it. It was kind of a little bit of an escape, because, I mean, no matter how passionate you are about something, when it's like shoved down your throat for 6 classes a semester, every semester for 4 years, you can get a little tired of it. So it was definitely nice to have something to kind of tend to when I got home, and to like learn about on the side to kind of keep me sane a little bit. And really loved everything that I was keeping, and became pretty good friends with Dan Anderson, who is my predecessor at Casey's. And kind of fell in love with it. And I didn't know that I really wanted to do that until I kind of fell into it, you know. When I was a junior, I kind of got booted out of music education, and was like, okay, well, I have to squeeze out a degree somehow. And BA, which is what my degree is kind of designed to be paired with another degree. I think one thing that I'm really hard on myself about is being kicked out of music ed. And then looking back on it, I'm like, no, screw that. Like, music ed was extremely difficult and the program is literally designed to weed people out. And every single year people talk about how their class came in with 16 people and like six graduated. And I'm like, no, like I got a degree and that's good. So I made that happen and got the job in admissions at Wesleyan, just because I was kind of like, I need to find a job and I'm really good with people. And I think that I'm a good fit for this position. I don't know if you remember Jane.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
She was like the operations coordinator for the School of Music and she recommended it to me. And then Loretto got that position and I was like, if Loretto can do it, then I can do it. So, I went and applied and I actually got an internship at the end of senior year in the admissions office, which really got my foot in the door. And it was really fun work. I mean, reaching out to people and being empathetic and connecting with people that were in my shoes, I mean, 4 years prior, was really passionate, like motivational work. I can't say that I didn't like it. But I eventually took over the territory for the city of Chicago, which was like amazing. I mean, I grew up in the inner city. And so I was going and traveling to schools in my neighborhood and in the city and where my little brothers were in high school. And so it was like an awesome experience. But while I was there, my office at Wesleyan was just like filled with plants. And I was just, every time I'd go to bed at night, I would pull up my phone and kind of watch videos of these horticulturists and these botanists and talking about different species of plants that I'd never heard of before. And just hearing these things that I'm like, how do more people not get involved with this? Like botany is literally what fuels the world. Like, I mean, it's crazy when you learn about all the connections that that field of study has to our everyday lives. And so, like I said, Casey's called me up and was recommended by his employees. Like, they gave him my name and said that, like, yeah, he's really passionate and he knows his stuff about plants. And I think if we gave him some time to train and we taught him kind of the tools of the trade, that he would do really well. So I had that opportunity, and there was a lot of political crap happening at Wesleyan and a lot of bureaucracy that was just cramping my style that I was like not a fan of.
So it was time to find something else.
Yeah, definitely. You just talk to any position you get anywhere. You talk to your coworkers and you kind of look at, I mean, I'm the type of person that the first day on the job, I'm like, okay, what is this going to look like in 5 years? You know what I mean? Like, I'm never, ever like complacent. You know what I mean? And that's something that Tess and I really bond over, is just never being too overly comfortable with where we are in life, and always kind of pushing forward. And that's something that I think is going to be good in the long run, hopefully. That when I got this opportunity, it's literally been 2 years since I left Wesleyan. And I think there is, let me think about this. I think there might be one admissions counselor in the office, if even that, that I worked with when I was there. So like, wow. The turnover rate for admissions counselors nationwide is like 2 years. It's really, really quick turnover rate, but Wesleyan was like noted. It was like, I mean, it had a reputation for hanging on to people in the admissions department because of how it was run and because it was so familial and it was so such a small, tight-knit community I mean, when I started, there was a woman who worked there, Michelle, who had been working there for like 30 years. And wow. Another guy, Bob Garrity, I mean, he'd been working there for upwards of 30 years. And that like just doesn't happen in admissions offices. Wow. And it made myself and a lot of my coworkers really, I mean, it gave us this kind of sense of like awe and like, wow, I'm in the right spot. I'm doing something that people stick with and they apply their lives to, and this is meaningful and blah, blah, blah. And then there was a really huge change of administration. And normally Wesleyan is pretty typically, they would hire from the inside. And there are a couple schools of thought about that. I've actually listened to a couple podcasts about like internal versus external hiring and nepotism and all kinds of stuff that comes with it. But honestly, to me, I think that there's no better way to know who you're hiring than to have worked with that person for the last 5 years and to be completely confident in their abilities. I think a lot of people interview really well and then they get on the job and they surprise you.
Yeah, right.
So I was super happy to be in that department. And then the guy that I interviewed with, who had been there for a long time, moved departments, and there was a new boss, and his boss, they created that position, and that position was new. And both of these people were from Tennessee and had never heard about Illinois Wesleyan University in their lives. And yeah, needless to say, it's kind of like, that's a whole other rabbit hole we could go down.
Yeah, we'll stay away from the drama
right,
a little bit.
Exactly. And it, so that kind of threw me for a loop in, but I had a couple good friends there from our class and it really helped to like, you'd get off work and I'd have friends over and we watch Game of Thrones and have a couple drinks and it was a good time and good work connections overall. But I think that kind of, and especially with all the other drama that's going on with universities around the country, let alone our alma mater, I'm pretty glad that I got out of that situation.
Yeah, for sure. I think like higher education right now is a mess for so many different reasons.
Absolutely.
Like, especially with the pandemic. And then if you look at like Wesleyan in particular with the whole drama with the School of Music and the possible deletion of it and that whole thing.
Right.
And like if you've listened to my podcast, you've probably already heard that episode, but yeah. It didn't get deleted. It got transformed somehow. So,
right. And I think one of the biggest things that I've noticed too is when I left was right in the very beginning of a lot of people getting really scared. Actually, I should say that a lot of people were really scared the year we graduated, because for the decade before us graduating, and I got the inside scoop, so it was really nice to see all these numbers. For the decade before we graduated, numbers had been declining since like 10 years before our graduation date. So people were really worried, and I won't say who, but in another person's words, someone very high up at the university, when I started that year in 2017, the university was in free fall and they were brought in to prevent that from happening. And I have to say a lot of great stuff has been done. Like there have been a lot of massive, massive issues that needed to be faced and a lot of really difficult decisions that are being made and have been made. But to be frank, I'd rather there be an Illinois Wesleyan that's going through really difficult times than no Illinois Wesleyan at all.
For sure.
And so I have to give some credence to those people, give a lot of credence to those people and what they did and what they continue to do. My wife included, she just got promoted to be a graphic designer there in the marketing department and works her butt off all the time for that institution. And she is a part of the reason that I have faith that that our alma mater is going to persist and continue to be what it was when we were there. And it's just crazy. I mean, literally, I mean, you have super map happening like that. And then you look on the Facebook groups that you and I are both a part of, and it's like, oh, a dozen tenure professors that have been there for 20 plus years were just fired like a month ago. And totally out of the blue, one of them, Chuck Springwood, literally said, I am thunderstruck. Like, I had no idea this was happening, and I cannot believe what's going on right now.
Wow.
I mean, one of my favorite professors, like, I had three classes with him that were all electives, and it was one of the largest parts of my time at university that I got away from music and delved into another topic of study, which was anthropology. And it was just like, to see him go was like, not only him, but then there were like 10 other people in that whole department, which was shut down. And it's like,
oh, it's so crazy.
Mind blowing. But sorry, I digress.
No, that's okay. So we have like a little bit more time, and I want to spend it on what you're currently doing.
Yeah.
And just your favorite parts of horticulture.
Yeah. So I've been managing the houseplant and tropical department at Casey's for about a year now. Literally, Tess and I got back from my honeymoon. It was so crazy because our date of our wedding was September 7th, which was the same day as my predecessor's birthday. And so it was his birthday, and he chose that day to leave so that, like, because with collecting Social Security, blah, 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 he chose that day to retire. So I was kind of upset. I didn't get to go to his retirement party, and he only got to catch the tail end of my wedding reception. But we became really good friends during our time there. I got to work with him for a year and kind of study under him for a year. And then I've been doing that for about a year now. I've been there 2 years total. And it's just, honestly, like, I tell Tess, there are a lot of, I mean, how should I put this? I love what I do, but there are always going to be negatives and always going to be positives, no matter like where you get in life.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I feel like one of my, I won't say if it's a negative or positive characteristics, is I am really good at nitpicking and like finding every little thing wrong with anything. I am like the devil's advocate, as I'm sure you remember.
Yes.
It doesn't necessarily mean that I am pessimistic, or I think I'm very realistic about things, but I just like to have contingency plans and to know what possibilities there are for things being pulled out from under me. And so at Casey's, it's crazy. I will wake up in the morning and not feel well and be having like, I kind of deal with a little bit of depression sometimes, and I will wake up just on the brink of tears or like having a nightmare and just like crying, waking up. And it's just like not a fun thing to experience. And I'm sure a lot of people with depression understand exactly what I'm saying, that you just, it's crazy. You think you wake up as a blank slate, and some days you wake up feeling like someone just died, or re-experiencing feelings of that. And it's just really hard to deal with. And I literally can say that sometimes I will feel like that, and I will go to work and my day will turn around because of what I do. And it's just such an awesome thing. Because I remember being in that office position at Wesleyan where I wasn't super passionate about it. And well, I should say wasn't quite as passionate about it as what I do now, and going and feeling that way and like, okay, well, now I'm at work and I'm sitting at my desk and I still feel terrible and I got to get through the day and I got to talk to three families who want me to tell them how awesome Illinois Wesleyan is. And okay, I guess I got to pull this off. And just being at Casey's where it's such a quick pace, And there are customers who come in who show me their plant that they got 3 years ago and how awesome it's doing. And it's time for repot and it's bloomed and all this other stuff and setting up displays. And now that I'm in charge of the department, it's pretty crazy the amount of like responsibility and autonomy I have. Like I am curating like tens of thousands of dollars worth of purchases and like cross country trucking and shipments from Florida and California and sometimes even Canada and all kinds of plants that come to the garden center, and that not only getting them, but I mean, when I order them, I have to know what species I'm ordering. Do we have the facilities to care for what I'm ordering? Do we have the customer base that's going to even be interested in this species of plant? And there are probably 120 different species that I order every single time I order. So it's a really crazy, crazy fast-paced job, but it's literally taught me probably 30 times more than what I knew than before I started. And I think that's pretty crazy because I'm sure people knew that when I was at Wesleyan, they were like, oh, John's the plant nerd and he knows all about plants. And one of the craziest things is that like the deeper you get into any field, like people don't understand how much information there is. Like, and you and I can kind of connect on the whole music thing. Like when people are like, oh, you're a music major, you sing. And we're like, okay, great. Like let me tell you about it. Yeah, exactly. Let me tell you about musicology and music theory and sound recording, audio engineering, everything. Like just everything that goes into music business, like therapy, all kinds of shit that you can talk about. That's just like, oh my God, there's so much information. And that's kind of like one of the lessons I learned early on that I'll never forget. What's it called? It's like I think it's called the Dunning-Kruger effect. I'm so happy I just remembered that. It's called like the myth of the expert. And basically when people, like the less people know about something, the more benefit of the doubt they give themselves. Like the less you know about music, if someone's just like a fan of music and they listen to a lot of top 40 stuff on their iPad or their phone or whatever, or in the car on the radio, and it's like they are more likely to say that they know a lot about music than someone who's like studied and dedicated their life to it. Like the more you learn about something, the more you learn that you don't know.
Yes, right. You're always learning too.
Like, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, if someone is more educated about a topic, they are actually more likely to sell themselves a little bit short, to kind of like rate themselves lower on how much they know, because they're aware of the vastness of everything that they don't know. And there's literally a meme that I think of all the time when I see this, and it's a pie chart, and like a thin sliver of the pie chart, probably like 5%, if even that, is highlighted as things I know. And then like 10% of the pie chart is highlighted as things that I know that I don't know, like things I'm aware of exist, but I don't know much about them. And then like the rest, 85% of the pie chart is like things I don't know that I don't know. And yeah, it's, I always think about that when I'm studying with plants, because it's just like, you get to a point where, and I'm sure you know too, where you talk to people about your field and you have to stay surface level. Like you cannot get complex about what you understand, because it's going to be on deaf ears. It's crazy at the garden center, working with all my coworkers, they know a lot about plants, but I specifically get into house plants rather than like natives or outdoor plants or the floral department or anything like that. And so there are very few times at work where I can get into a really complex discussion with my coworkers and we'll just like bounce off of each other and have like a hour long conversation. And that's like I hope for those like once every 5 months, you know what I mean? Like those types of conversations are like what I live for. but it's really hard to have. And I feel like that's why Tess and I have that long-term plan of moving back to Chicago, because, man, I want to work at a botanical gardens.
That'd be so cool.
Yeah, I want to look at getting a master's degree, or maybe even going back and just taking a few formal education classes so that I can like prove to other people, show them a piece of paper and say, like, I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Yeah, it's a really, really, really long-term plan, but it's definitely something that I am pretty confident I want to do and that we have kind of set in stone. So, yeah.
Hey, so exciting. So exciting.
I know. It's absolutely insane to think that that's what we want to do. And we regularly look around at all my plants and say, like, how much are we going to pay for like a moving truck when we when we want to go to Chicago and stuff like that? It's just crazy.
I do the same thing. I'm like, oh shoot. Like, I've acquired so much stuff.
Right. And you're cross country.
And like, I gotta go across the country.
Right. Oh. I'm worried about 2 hours and you're in Massachusetts.
Yeah. I'm like not even looking at what the U-Haul is going to cost. Cause yeah, I'm not going to think about it yet. It's okay.
Yeah. Right. Just ignorance is bliss for now. Let's put that on the back burner.
For sure. Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause I'm not like trying to move out anytime, right, you know, remotely soon right now. So got some time, but
I feel like even though we have our plan, and it's a year away before we want to even think about moving, it's still like, we only have a year. You know what I mean? You start thinking.
I know. Yeah. Time is crazy. And it moves so much faster once you get to be so old like us.
Yeah. So old, like, so old like us.
No, I hit 25 and now I'm like, wow, I feel kind of old.
Yeah. Like I looked at Tess the other day and I was like, I have done the same thing every day, 9 to 6 for the last 2 years. Like, it's so crazy because you think about like, okay, you're in grade school going to each new grade, and then you get to high school. That's a big thing. Then you go to college. That's a huge thing. And then it's just like, phew, figure it out.
Yeah. That's why I prolonged that. I went to grad school, and then after grad school, I really started to like freak out.
Right.
And now I'm at that point where I can't really freak out because it's a pandemic. So it's like everything got derailed, right. But yeah, time moves by in a weird way once you are like done with college or done with grad school or whatnot.
Absolutely. I kind of had to have to regularly think about like pulling my head out of the sand and like looking at, hey, this is not forever and there's a plan and we're doing other things and like go do something fun this weekend and contact friends you haven't contacted in a while and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's good. Always good to do those things.
Absolutely.
Well, it was so great having you on the podcast, John, and I'm sure my listeners will find your story super interesting as I do. So thank you for joining
me. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I'm super excited. I'm definitely going to go back. I know I've seen like a bunch of your episodes, but I haven't seen all of them. So I'm definitely interested now to go back and watch all of them.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. All right. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in, and see you next week for the next episode.